Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut house.
We welcome you to another episode of Winging It in Motown Radio. The Red Wings really suck ass this year. Hey everybody, it's Kyle, your host for this episode of Winging It in Motown Radio. Obviously, I don't have much of a future in singing, but it's Christmas time, the holidays, so we're getting in the holiday spirit. So we're going to give you a holiday version of Wing It Motown Radio and try and be as jolly as we can, given the state of things right now. So tonight we've got Lauren and we've got JJ and we've got Peter, and then obviously you've got yours truly. Everybody, ladies and gentlemen, how are we feeling tonight outside of sports feelings?
Not too bad, actually.
That's great.
Jolly as fuck over here.
Jolly as fuck. All right.
Jolly AF.
Jolly AF. Ed, is that your answer, Peter?
Sure, why not?
Wow. Very good. Very good. Great to hear it. Great to hear it. Glad to be back on the horn and talking some Red Wings. I don't know. Last time we spoke, things were pretty bad. And now that we're back speaking again, things are still not very good. Even though things did get better there for a couple of days when they played the Ducks and they dropped six goals on Anaheim. But everything just kind of bottomed out again. So we'll just go ahead and jump right in. So as Peter said, as the Wings burn, obviously, that Anaheim game was a lot of fun for everybody because, you know, the Wings scored six goals and, you know, I mean, that's like a rare Pokemon right now. The Red Wings, to see the Red Wings score, even more than one goal at this point, as pathetic as that sounds. They had a game against Anaheim, against Carolina, which never happened because of ice issues. So they postponed that, delayed it. We don't have a makeup for that yet. And then we had a bludgeoning at the hands of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Who else? Not a very good outing. And we lost our starting goalie. So really just a real, real rough look. I guess the positive is that Nick Jensen registered his first NHL point and killed two NHL goalies. So hey, good for him! Merry Christmas, rookie kid guy. I don't know. I guess
year old rookie.
The 26-year-old rookie. Who was the team who had like the 30-year-old goaltender rookie like recently? Does anybody remember? It was recently, like I think within the last 2 years. JJ, do you remember
that? No, I don't remember.
I thought there was one, like a super old goaltender. It doesn't matter. Whatever. Irrelevant. Getting our quick takes from the past, I guess, what, few games since we last talked, or I guess more recently the last two games, the Ducks and the Lightning. And then obviously there are games we don't really need to touch on that much, but I guess the quick takes there. The Anaheim game, I didn't really get. I got to watch like the cliff notes of it, you know, when they do the condensed replay after hours, like 2 a.m. I watched it while I was at work. you know, they gave up two goals and then they kind of rumbled, they kind of rallied. And Thomas Tatar had the hat trick, which is great to see because he had been such a disappointment to some people. So I guess, you know, divvying it up between the two games, there's some good and obviously there's a lot of bad. So we're not going to try. Well, I don't think we are going to try and make this a poo-poo fest right now. But, you know, obviously, what are your guys' quick takes? Lauren, let's let you take this off first.
Okay. Well, I didn't get to see the entire Ducks game because I was actually on my way back from Detroit when that game started. But I saw basically from, like, as soon as we tied it up at 3, it was just after that I turned on the game. So it was pretty nice to watch us, you know, take over and, you know, win that game. It was definitely a little iffy at times, but I was really stoked for Tatar getting his first NHL hat trick. That was pretty cool. Obviously, the Hurricanes game didn't happen. I was at work that night and would not have seen it anyway. But then last night's game, I obviously had the recap for it, and that was just terrible. Like,
not fun.
No, not at all. And it was, I don't know, like, it watching that game, like, even without guys like Stamkos and Callahan and is it Kucherov, I think, is out right now too.
Kucherov was out.
And like, just the entire rest of the team, even including some of these rookies and stuff that they have, like, I was reminded, like, how scary of a team they can be. And it isn't necessarily just who they have on the ice. It's how they deploy them. Like, just watching their forecheck is, like, I was, like, cringing already, like, having, you know, war flashbacks to the last two playoff runs. Or, well, you can't really call it a playoff run. If it was
playoff outings. You know,
playoff outings, yes, there you go. And I was just like, you know, it's such a different, you know, such a contrast to what the Wings are now. And it is, you know, sad to watch that. And we're obviously in the declining years, and we have been for a while Tampa's kind of more on their own rise. But, that was just hard to watch. I wanted to turn it off, but I had to finish the recap. So, obviously, I tried to have a little fun with writing poems and stuff, but that wasn't much to.
You did a very good job because it's very hard to do stuff like that after a game like that. And I mean, you brought it up. I mean, the forecheck, the way that they play against the Red Wings. I don't know, like, because I don't watch the Tampa Bay Lightning when they play other teams. I don't know if that's, like, a thing for them or if it's just when they play the Red Wings and the Red Wings are just really soft to that, which I know that the key to if anybody asks me what are the keys to beating the Red Wings, my answer is always be aggressive on the forecheck because the team will cave. And that's pretty much what the what Tampa does, and I think we've seen it multiple times this season, so I don't know, but it just seems like even without their best players like Kucherov, who has been like just he has always just like owned us, you know, even without him and Stamkos, who is obviously their big name player, it just sucks, you know, you would think, because going into that game, I know that Ataria, the editor over at Raw Charge, she was like, yeah, we're banged up and we suck right now. And, you know, because they're also on the outside looking in at the playoffs right now. And, yeah, they're not doing well. But, you know, they came in and they had literally no problem handling Red Wings. It was like it didn't even faze them. So anyways,
though, she says stuff like, oh, we're so banged up, or oh, you guys are going to totally roll all over us. And then the complete opposite happens. And I'm like, okay,
he told me that, and I was like,
using like reverse psychology to the hockey gods or something. Like, knock it off.
Right. Okay. JJ, your take.
I mean, you said the only thing I have to say about the concept of like forecheck aggressively, the game that we've you kind of forgotten about this, is that 4-1 loss to the Kings. And the Kings didn't really beat us by forechecking aggressively. They played a pretty heavy neutral zone trap and beat us. So right now we're finding all sorts of interesting ways to lose. I don't really have it, like, I don't really have anything to add about the Ducks game. I think it's been, like, it was fun.
You had fun. Yeah.
It was satisfying. I always enjoy beating the Ducks. I always like it when Corey Perry is upset and Ryan Getzlaf goes home. I really thought that, like, maybe in the postgame, like, not, like, immediately, but somebody on the team should have called Kessler a dirty shit or something for that hit that he laid on Mike Green Mike Green is out this week. 17 seconds left to go in a game, and you've got that fucking donkey taking runs at people just because he's a sore loser, and he's, of course, he's gonna go, oh, you're gonna play to the whistle and shit like that. It's like, they were losing, that game was over. He's just a dirty player, and it's just annoying. And even though we've got the guy who goes out and fight and sparks the team back, nobody had the guts to kind of call Kessler out for that. I just thought that was bullshit. As far as Tampa goes, I think Tampa fans are getting tired of playing us too, because every time we play them, like, injuries just pile up.
Right.
Stamkos got hurt for the, like, basically for the year against us, and we lost Helm against them in the last round, and we got Nick Jensen killing goalies in this game. with Tampa, you know what? I wish that we could be rivals, because I feel like I have to contain a lot of my dislike for Tampa, because after so many years of watching, like, Colorado fans, as their team got less and less relevant, they got angrier and angrier about the Red Wings doing well. I don't want to become that fan.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I totally get you on that. You don't want to become Anthrax Jones.
Yeah, definitely not. That's my entire... I wake up every morning and do my affirmations, like, don't be like Anthrax Jones today.
Who is still one of my favorite people, but yes, I don't want to be like him.
So, and other than that, I can't hide it for Brian Boyle, man. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Every time he scores against us, it drives me nuts.
And that goal was like, he scored that goal, and I was just like, why? Like, why did that have to happen? Like, this shit doesn't need to happen.
That was my exact reaction.
It's just, yeah, you're like, why? Like, God, anybody else?
Like, oh, of course. You know, well, yeah, it's like,
I don't know. The way he scored, too, it's just like, God damn it.
Yeah, the way that we, like, try, and we're banging our heads against the wall, just praying that at some point we can get an open lane with a guy in it with a stick that actually gets it past the goaltender and isn't going to deflect it up into the netting or out into the fourth row or right in the face of one of his own teammates, because that's the way it goes. And, like, they go out there and, like, oh, well, flip it in, it's a goal, whatever, that's easy shit. Why doesn't everybody do this?
Yeah, exactly.
It seems how they scored, like, all of their goals against us. Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Every single time. Like, that's just what happens in those games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I mean, that's... It was frustrating. I mean, from top to bottom, from start to finish, that game was frustrating. There was really nothing positive to take from that. And obviously, you didn't have Mike Green, who has been your best defenseman. But even with Mike Green, that game probably doesn't really change much. Maybe it's 4-2 or 3-1 or something like that. It doesn't make much of a difference. Peter, what about you? Do you have any takes from the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I spent some time today thinking about this, because obviously, you know, I knew, you know, we always start the show like this. And, you know, I've been trying to think of something that isn't just going to be a repeat of, like, the last couple of weeks. Most of what I have to say is kind of a repeat the last couple of weeks. But, you know, I think, like, one of the things that JJ said was, you know, kind of sticks out to me. It's like the Anaheim game was fun. And, you know, thinking back, like, I can think of a lot of games this year that just weren't fun, you know, to watch, you know, just, I don't know, boring. I mean, it's kind of the only way I can say it. Cause like some of these, you know, some of these games, like, I mean, things are happening, you know, there's shots on goal, there's, you know, like I'm thinking of, like, kind of like the Philly game, you know, both teams are getting chances, but I mean, I'm just sitting there, I'm like, this is so boring. And I think one of those things is, like, you know, my entire hockey experience, I have a lot of experience as a former Islanders fan of watching bad teams. I've seen lots of different types of bad teams. You know, so I have a lot of experience rooting for a team that's not doing very well. And, you know, the most frustrating thing about that is when you watch a team that just gives you nothing to be excited about, you know? And, you know, so the Ducks game, you know, I mean, we made a lot of mistakes, you know? I mean, obviously, you know, they scored we scored six goals. Obviously, that's great. I'm not taking anything away from that. That was fun. You know, we should do more of that. You know, but I mean, like, you know, we were still making the same type of mistakes we've been making all year. We just, you know, we were able to score more, you know, we were able to score more than a goal. You know, but, you know, it's fun. I mean, like, if you're going to lose, you know, at least, you know, give us entertainment, you know, make it look like you actually care if you're going to win, you know, and, you know, like, you know, obviously it makes it a lot more, you know, makes it a lot easier to be a fan, you know, but during the, I can't even remember because I've kind of blocked it out of my mind, the Tampa Bay game, like, I think we were talking about this on Slack. Like, I'm sitting there and I kind of got this feeling that it sucks. It's like when you're just kind of feel numb as a fan. It's like, oh, Tampa Bay has a power play. Oh, I bet you they're going to do that thing they do every single time that we never stop. Oh, hey, look, it's in the net. You know, hey, we got a power play. Okay, we got zero shots. You know, and it's like you're not even mad anymore, you know, because like you kind of know it's coming and you're just like, well, this is going to suck. And like it's a bad feeling, you know, it's not fun. You know, it's not fun to be a fan like that. But like the specific thing is, oh, I kind of said before, is, you know, watching the Tampa game, it just like when we play against them, it highlights just how bad our power play is. Because the things that they're doing, we could, like, I'm not saying like we could just like flip a switch and be as good as them. Like, I mean, I think they have, you know, especially when they're healthy and they got Kucherov and Stamkos and stuff. I mean, they have weapons that we don't have, you know, Hedman, you know, Drouin. But I mean, some of the stuff that they're doing that makes it effective, we could do. Like, it's not hard. You know, Prashanth was saying, you know, basically, you know, on the power play, you know, we're just stationary, you know, pretty much our power play is like everybody stand around, and when Zetterberg gets the puck, it's going to be on a stick for 10 seconds, or Cronwall is going to get it and hold on to it too long. And unfortunately, like, we're starting to see that wear off on, you know, Larkin. Like, Larkin made a play on the power play where he's coming in and he should have just taken a shot, and he took like an extra, you know, half second to, you know, go to the left a little bit, and the lane he had closed, you know. So in the Ducks game, you know, they're throwing pucks at the net, and it seems like they just forgot about it, you know? So yeah. I think that's the thing for me is like this fresh, you know, I mean, obviously nobody likes to lose. I don't like to lose, you know, but going into the season, I mean, I thought that, you know, I didn't think we were going to make the playoffs. Obviously I want to, but I, you know, I thought that there was at least a very good chance we don't make it, but at least make it look like you're trying. Cause there's been too many games this year that it looks like nobody cares. You know, it looks like they just don't care.
Yeah, speaking of not caring, just kind of we'll riff on this, because obviously we could sit here and dissect every single thing that's going wrong with the team right now. Obviously, the power play has been very, very bad, and that was one thing that kind of damned them last season. And, you know, they made changes to fix it this, you know, in the offseason, and obviously nothing has changed. It's still really, really bad. I'd argue probably it might be worse right now. But anyways, we have to talk about it. It's the talk of the town here in Detroit, whether it's on radio or on TV or I guess in print with some of the mainstream outlets. There has to be, if things keep up the way that they are right now, there has to be some sort of changes on the horizon. And not just like benching players changes, which obviously has been made vocal that's going to happen. I guess the big thing, and we've talked about this before, you know, who would we rather have canned, if anybody has to be canned? And, you know, obviously I think the consensus vote is that it's Holland. And I mean, I don't know. I like, you know, you could fire Ken Holland this season. Personally, I don't think it's going to change anything. Not right now, at least. It's kind of like that would have to be like a long-term kind of like plan. I mean, And there's someone who asked me a question earlier on Twitter. Do you guys think, and like this is what I want to ask, is do you think that this season is more influenced by Blashill than last season? Whereas we're seeing the Red Wings kind of bottom out big time right now, whereas we saw them make it into the playoffs, kind of squeak in. Do you think that what they're doing this year is more of Blashill, or do you think what we saw last year might have been more Blashill, where the Red Wings kind of found success where they could? I guess that's kind of what they were asking. Is Blashill more responsible for what we're seeing this year, or more responsible for what we've seen like last year when they went into, you know, they made a playoff berth? We'll go in reverse order here. Peter, you can go ahead and start us off here. And it might be hard for you. You might not have watched the Red Wings last year. I know that you're.
No, I mean, I did. Like, I've been, you know, kind of, you know, the Red Wings have been my main team probably for like 4 years maybe now. Okay. But I mean, yeah, you know, there's a big difference between just kind of watching as a fan and watching as somebody who has to, you know, write about the team and talk about the team. You know, like, you know, there's a huge difference in like kind of like the level of detail that you're paying attention to. I remember, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember like last year, you know, there was the concept of the line blender was kind of there too. You know, that's not a new thing this year, but I don't know. I think, but some of the lineup decisions seem, I don't know. I don't remember there being as many lineup decisions last year that were just baffling, like, you know, where I didn't really understand the thought process behind it. Or like this year, it seems more of this, I don't even know what you'd call it. It's like all of a sudden, like, you know, Athanasiou is not playing, or, you know, Mantha is not playing. And I think I looked at, you know, like the idea of, like, you know, let's put Athanasiou on the fourth line, you know, and play him 5 minutes even strength or something like that.
Much a thing last year for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
To keep the flow of things going. The Red Wings just don't have the safety blanket of a player like Pavel Datsyuk anymore, and I think that's a big thing. And personally, my opinion is, I think that you're just Blashill's dealing with a much lesser lineup because of that. And you know, let's face it, you know, the Nielsen's a good center, but he's not Pavel Datsyuk. We've known that from the start, and you know, and it is what it is. I think you know, Blashill's had some big faults so far this season, but he also hasn't been set up to, you know, he hasn't been set up well by his GM. JJ, what about, what do you think?
I think there's two different considerations here. First off, the question of, is this more Blashill's team this year than it was last year? I think that's a no-brainer. Every single year you've got with a coach is going to be more that coach's team. The Red Wings got more and more Babcockian as his time in Detroit carried on. They will get more and more Blashillian for however long that dude lasts. Mm-hmm. So I think that we are seeing, like, I don't know, I would guess the Lashoff call-up, I don't think that Blashill necessarily argued against. I wouldn't be able to say confidently whether or not he... you know, would have wanted somebody else, but at the end of the day, Blasha was the guy who played Lashoff.
Loves that guy.
It's the same in love with the hard work guy isn't. I mean, that's the thing. The guy does what you ask him to, and he works as hard as he absolutely can. That's super easy to love as a coach, and that's exactly what Lashoff is. He's not a challenging player to coach. He's just not that good. So it's, I don't want to call Blashill like a lazy coach in that regards. But it's this team is, you know, obviously, well, they're missing something, and they sometimes try to get a little too fancy, or sometimes try to avoid things, or aren't, and that's the weird thing, is that it's a trap of, like, they're not creative enough, but when they are trying to be creative, they're being reckless, and I think that he's Blashill is trying to limit mistakes more than he's trying to create opportunities. So that's what he is. I think he still is growing to do as an NHL coach. I consistently say I think Blashill has more to give at the NHL level, so I'm not necessarily on the fire Blashill train. Previously, you said that, you know, something's got to change if things keep going this way. I'm not sure I agree with you there, and I think that the Red Wings have a really easy out in that decision, in that Ken Holland specifically said that a big core part of this team, he said it more with the contracts he's given out than the words he said, but he's deeply hinted at it. Darren Helm, Justin Abdelkader are very big parts of this team, and with them being out, that gives the, well, of course we look like we don't have an identity, because that's our identity is Darren Helm and Justin Abdelkader, and those guys are hurt right now.
Yeah,
it looks like we're not giving the effort, because Darren Helm and Justin Abdelkader are like the effort guys on this team, and they're hurt right now. So
yeah,
it's going to be like those guys are going to be our trade deadline acquisition.
Sure.
Ken Holland basically has to pray at this point that it's not too late to make a playoff run, because it's not entirely impossible that Ken Holland is right in that consideration, and that with Darren Helm and Justin Abdelkader, the Red Wings will be better. Of course, we all know that that's going to mean that Athanasiou and maybe even Mantha come out of the lineup as a result of that, because Jeff Blashill isn't ever going to pull Ott and Miller out of the lineup at the same time.
Right. But, I'm with you. I definitely don't think that. I do think that if you put Abdelkader and Helm back in this lineup, the team is better. I mean, let's face it. Athanasiou and Mantha are both good. I'd rather have them in the lineup. And you know, obviously they will get pulled, and that's just the reality of it. But I'm speaking from a more broad sense. Like, the team doesn't have a plan. I mean, I don't know. It's just, if it comes down to it and management or ownership comes to the team and it's like, hey, what the hell is going on here? We have a new arena opening up next year and you guys are awful. Like, I mean, if it's going to be anybody, for me, it's got to be Holland. And I don't know. That's just me, though. But that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be anybody. Teflon. What?
You know, it won't be. Holland is Teflon. There's no way.
I know that, but this is what I think.
Blashill's going to be the fall guy.
I know Blashill's the fall guy. We've all expressed that. But I'm just saying that from my perspective, if it's going to be anybody, it's got to be him. I mean, he's the one who has constructed this albatross roster filled with terrible contracts and aging veterans. And, I mean, I don't know. And it is – I'm not saying that Blashill isn't at fault for anything, because he is – I mean, there is no excuse for Nicholas Cronwall playing 20 minutes a game. Nicholas Cronwall has been two shades under dog shit lately. He sucks. He's not good. We're not seeing the rest that he's supposed to be getting. You guess you can say the Carolina game, but I don't count that. They had to, you know, whatever, they traveled, they practiced. So that's my take on that. But yeah, JJ, you're absolutely right. Holland's got Teflon. He's never going to be fired. He will leave on his terms, and Blashill absolutely will be the fall guy, and it will be the wrong guy leaving. Lauren, do you have anything to add to that at all? Kind of a loaded baked potato there, but
mm-hmm. I'm going to reiterate something that I've said basically from the beginning of Blashill's tenure. You know, when we first saw the team starting to struggle last year, a lot of fans were like, "What is going on? You know, why is he suddenly a terrible coach who makes all these baffling decisions?" I guess actually this is going to be kind of a 2-point thing. Babcock made some seriously questionable decisions when he was here also. I mean, he was the guy that put Justin Abdelkader and Dan Cleary on Pavel Datsyuk's wings, mm-hmm. 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. So, you know, and it's not like he's not made decisions like that before. I mean, he was not immune. I think, you know, people have these rose colored glasses when they're like, oh, Babcock left us. And he was, you know, he's touted as the greatest coach, you know, of this, you know, this coaching era or whatever. And, you know, look what he's doing in Toronto. And it's like, well, Toronto has a very different set of players. They have
absolutely
teenagers. They have, you know, people that, you know, his veterans are very complimentary players. The ones that he's supposed to be playing are the young kids, and they're bona fide, you know, high first round picks, if not first overall. And it's, you know, he's able to play these kids because if he doesn't play them, then, you know, there's literally no sense in him not playing guys like Matthews and Marner and, you know, whoever else is, you know, mm-hmm. the next Jesus in Toronto.
Sure.
And the other point that I want to reiterate, and like I said, I've been saying this since last year, is that you look at the success that the Griffins had in 2013, the shortened season for the NHL, they won the Calder Cup. You know, there's the Between the Benches videos that I love from that year. You get to, you know, go inside the locker room and you get to see everything like that. And you see the type of coach that Blashill is. And it's like, okay, why is that not translating to the NHL level? The thing that I have always maintained is that the relative skill level of the Griffins to the rest of the AHL, and that includes now because they're still, you know, a pretty good team this year, is much higher than the Red Wings compared to the rest of the NHL. Like, it's no contest at this point. And I think that's what people are not understanding, because you look at the players that Blashill had at his disposal in Grand Rapids, you look at their skill sets and, you know, how they're being deployed. And then you look at the Red Wings, like, especially with the defense, it's not even close. You know, mm-hmm. he had very mobile guys in the AHL to jump into the play. And we saw him trying to do that in the first, I don't know, dozen games or so last year. And we saw it wasn't working. So he's had to make changes. A lot of ways I think he's kind of reverted to the system that Babcock kind of left behind. And of course, having to use the players that Babcock had kind of amassed into a team that worked with his system. So we're still seeing the remnants of a Babcock-built coaching system and the players that work in it that Blashill has been trying to fit into his system and has found out that it doesn't work. And he's still, you know, I think he's still trying to figure out what on earth to do with the people that he's been given. I absolutely agree that he has not been put in a position to succeed by his GM. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, lie and say that I don't like Blashill as a coach. I mean, he obviously has not been successful so far at the NHL level, but I don't dislike the guy. I'm not calling for his head like some people do. You know, they seem to have a vendetta against him, but I'm definitely more willing to give him, you know, more of a benefit of a doubt than I think a lot of people are.
Yeah,
because of what I saw him do in Grand Rapids. Yeah. So
all I can say there is bingo. Like, that's a really great point, because you think back to that Calder Cup run. They had Thomas Tatar on that roster. They had some really big names on that roster. So yeah, you know what? You are absolutely right. So I mean, guess branching off onto another topic here, our next topic, the injuries, the returns, all that stuff. We kind of touched on everything. Justin Abdelkader, the Darren Helm, think they'll be making returns here soon, obviously, but you know, they lost Howard, so now who has been the saving grace for the team for much of the season, now we have to fall back on Peter Mrazek, who has been very shaky, can't control rebounds like he has been able to, and just has not looked like up to par from what he has been. And then you have Jared Crow, who is the call-up, obviously. Got the L in his first NHL game, but didn't look bad. I thought he was okay. You know, looking ahead, I guess, you know, what can we expect? Because you have Marchenko out. Erickson, is Erickson still out? No, Erickson isn't still out.
I honestly couldn't remember first.
Yeah, I honest to God, I was like blanking there. But
yeah, no, he was playing with Jensen last game.
Yeah, he was playing with Jensen. Yeah, Marchenko, he'll make a return here soon. Ish, I don't really remember the timetable on that, but obviously losing Howard sucks, not only for the team but for Howard, because he was having a really good season. Of all players, I think he really needed to have that season this season. And you know, we don't have a timetable. All we know is that it's quote a while. And I honestly am kind of like thinking you're probably seeing like minimum of 6 weeks. I don't know. Any question or any quick thoughts or takes on the injury situation? You know, like I said, we already talked about how getting Helm and Advocator back would probably make the team better, but I don't know.
I want to play off what Peter said earlier about the Red Wings not being as fun to watch, mm-hmm. and tie it into this category with, I can't wait till we get Brendan Smith back. Because he hasn't been good this year, but he's been fun. His mistakes are fun, too.
I forgot. I honestly forgot he played for this team.
Jeff would hate you for that, for saying that.
Yeah, Jeff would be very upset with me, but you know what? Whatever.
You know what?
Yeah, I don't care about
Bruins game for that.
Yeah. But no, you're right, JJ. I think getting Brendan Smith back would be a would be fun, because even though it would cost you probably, you know, what?
It's a letter Sproul never play, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess whatever. Sproul, I honestly hasn't really impressed me in the few games he's played, you know, since being back in the lineup. So I don't know. I honestly have been more impressed with Ouellette, which is funny because I thought that Ouellette was the lesser, but Ouellette has actually looked pretty solid so far this season. I actually really like what he's done. He had a couple of goofs, but hey, he's still young. But yeah, no, absolutely. Smith coming back would be great. So I mean, yeah, maybe the Red Wings do, you know, level out with all these players becoming more, you know, becoming healthy and all that good shit. But, you know, it remains to be seen. I honestly don't even, like, I haven't even heard, like, updates, like, actual updates on Brendan Smith or Darren Helm or Justin Advocator. Have we actually had, like, some actual concrete updates on that yet?
Advocator's been skating lately.
Yeah, I know he's been skating. But we haven't.
No, there's no like timetable update.
Yeah,
I know that when they were showing the Red Wings goofing around with a football in Raleigh during the Carolina Hurricanes snafu, they showed Darren Helm was playing catch, but he was only using one hand or one arm. So,
right. Well, he doesn't have hands anyway. So,
I think I heard that Bertuzzi could be starting to skate soon after Christmas break.
Yeah, he's traveling. Yeah, he's traveling with the team. That's for sure. So
yeah, but as far as practices and stuff, so far yeah. I think it's been nothing. So
yeah, for sure. I forgot. Fuck, I forgot about Bertuzzi too. So.
How dare you?
I know. I'm sorry. I forget about everybody. It's just like the team's just things get very forgettable. but yeah, I you know, there's. The team can get better, but obviously...
Yeah, and that's what I said last week, is that the Red Wings aren't this bad. They're not but they're not this bad, yeah.
Mm-mm. Right.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that this is... What we've seen over this last stretch of games is exactly what the Red Wings are. Obviously, I'm not saying that they're a great team. I'm not even seeing that they're a good team, but they are definitely not what we have seen over the last, what, 10 games?
Yeah. Our saving grace is the Atlantic is trash.
What was that?
Our saving grace is that the Atlantic is trash. The Metropolitan is going to send 5 teams into the playoffs.
Yeah.
We're not, like, totally out of the possibility of being able to catch up to 3rd in the Atlantic, which would be hilariously dumb and extremely satisfying. Because, you know what? I don't care. I still want them to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, if we have a chance to make it, then make it, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think we would replace from the Atlantic if we were to make it?
I think Ottawa's still a joke.
Yeah, Ottawa is got to be the other one. I think that they fall off pretty hard. I don't think you touch Montreal or Boston at this point.
Well, I'm hoping, I think it'd be great to see Montreal, Tampa, and Detroit get in again and then just wave to Boston on the outside.
And that's assuming that at like Tampa doesn't, you know, heat up, which they very well probably will heat up once they get their good players back and all that shit. But, you know, they can eat all they want against us, but compared to other NHL teams, they're not that great. So, anyways, moving along to the next topic that we have, looking around the league. Obviously, you have teams like Columbus, who just keeps winning games. Like JJ said, the Metropolitan is just kind of like the gauntlet of the NHL right now. It just seems like everybody's doing really well. Carey Price got pulled, stared down his coach. That was a huge storyline for whatever reason. It's because it was Montreal. That's why. So yeah, everything is weird right now in the NHL, it seems. I don't know. I still think the NHL is super boring this year. But you know, it is what it is. Do you guys like have any thoughts about around the league? I mean, obviously, you know, you see teams like Tampa who aren't playing up to par this year. You have Ottawa, who is like overachieving for what they are. And then you have teams like who's a team who isn't playing well? Who should be good right now?
Dallas.
That's a good one. Fuck that team. Yeah. But yeah, no, your guys' takes on everything. You know, like I said, NHL's kind of boring this year, but you know, there's still a lot of fun to be had, I guess you could say. What are your guys' opinions? Or oh wow, I just saw Lauren's message there about Landon Ferraro. Sorry. Yeah, Landon Ferraro apparently has an ACL injury, so that sucks. Best wishes to him. But yeah, your guys' takes on around the league.
Fuck Jaromir Jagr.
Yes.
Agreed. Agreed.
I mean, congrats to the guy for playing forever and scoring all those points, but I don't care. Kiss my ass. Old ass jerk. Never came to Detroit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just taking a look. We were talking about the standings, you know, who we could catch. And, you know, I noticed that, Montreal, you know, Montreal's goal differential is plus 31. So I started looking around because I was like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot. And then the Atlantic, the top three teams, you have Pittsburgh at plus 24, the Rangers at plus 33, and Columbus at plus 38. Like, that's just insane to me.
Yeah. Like I said, the NHL makes no sense this year.
I do agree, though. It has seemed like it's a boring year, which is weird to think about. But I think that has accurately described quite a bit of this year. And maybe that's just because, like, the Wings have been boring to watch so much this year. That like, but, like, usually, like, I had the Philly-Washington game on before, you know, starting the podcast tonight. And it might be like the first time about all season that I've like intentionally watched another, you know, any other team play. And I don't know if it's just me, like, just not being interested in hockey and like in general as much this year. And if that is related to the Wings performance, but it just doesn't seem like it's very, you know, exciting. I don't know. I would say boring is an accurate word for this year.
It hasn't been very exciting. You're right.
Yeah, I was noting during the Philly-Washington game earlier tonight, because I was also watching it. And like Lauren, I haven't been watching as many games on off nights, just a number of reasons. And some of them are, it's just not as exciting to me. Like, I look at the schedule every night, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to leave. And there's so many rivalries that have gone so bland. And that was the Philly-Washington game. It was actually fun watching on Twitter that, like, Philly and Washington fans really don't get along. So yeah, that was part of what made the game more fun to me, that the higher stakes. And we all know that NBCSN generally does a pretty crappy job of making the rivalry nights actual exciting and angry stuff. But yeah, it just feels like the entire league is trying to rebuild some rivalries, and some things are falling apart and other things like aren't quite there yet. Like this, it just feels like a transitional league or a transitional year for the entire league. And like, we need a few new storylines to replace some of the ones that are kind of just dying off.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say that some of them dying off is necessarily a bad thing, because there are some storylines in this league that I'm like, okay, let's move on. We can be done with this one. So.
No, I agree with that. There's a lot of that, but like, I don't know. In a way, I almost miss the constant shit out of Toronto about how you can't win with Phil Kessel. Because we always knew it was a stupid ass take, and we always knew that it was going to be proven wrong. And now that it's proven wrong, it's like, man, there's nothing entertaining about it anymore. I need the awful Canadian MSMers to say dumb shit like that. Like, they don't really have a new target of that ire right now.
Mm-hmm.
No, because they got their number one overall pick, and you know, they can just,
right,
you know, cry into their Austin Matthews jerseys and
yeah,
stuff at night. So
yeah, the best thing coming out of Canada, the best wine can come out of Canada right now is about Penny Oleksiak being given the Athlete of the Year award.
Oh God,
that's gonna die out. I've never heard of that award before that happened. And
exactly.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah, God. that was so petty. And like,
it really was.
It was old white dudes on Twitter, like, crying about a teenage girl getting an award that they think should have gone to, you know, someone who's already got all of these other awards.
Yeah, like
that mean more to him. Like, Crosby, I can guarantee you, doesn't give a single shit about that award.
He's won it twice too. Like, a super successful Olympian versus the guy who didn't win MVP in his own league. And Crosby had a good year, but get the shit over it, people.
Oh man, I do love it. And I that was probably one of those petty things. It was one of those things where I saw it and then I like looked around for the tweets that people were talking about, and I didn't even care to comment on it. I was just like, whatever, I don't have time for this shit. It's just like, you know, it pissed me off even knowing that it existed.
Yeah, it's a balance. Laura and I were talking about this earlier, about reading the things that you know are going to make you feel stupid for having intentionally read them. Like, I think in a way my hockey fandom relies on those things, like just keeping a good balance of them. I need to read stupid, infuriating things to keep me interested. Fortunately, Helene St. James.
I'll know where this is going.
I'm setting up. Speaking of, yeah, I got a Jeff transition going. Yeah, fortunately, we got Helene St. James to write that they need to bench Nyquist. And then, like, following it up with, like, this fun string of, like, Twitter quote retweets, essentially, like...
She's been doing this a lot lately.
Yeah, she loves Ott so much more than Nyquist. And we've been having a lot of fun with how angry Helene is at Nyquist and Tatar. And now that Tatar scored, like, 3 goals, she had to really back off and take all of her anger out on the one guy. It's just so hilarious that she gives such a pass to Zetterberg and Cronwall, the two definite leaders on the team who are probably most responsible for the power play not working very well. Because I know that there are lots of different decisions that go in there that suck too. Specifically, they let Riley Sheahan try to be the zone entry guy, and he's probably the worst person on the power play to do that. Zetterberg at the right circle is not dangerous anymore. Cronwall doesn't pinch the points down, but somehow it's like, it's all about Nyquist is screwing up the power play, and it's hilarious how much she seems to hate those two guys.
We have reached the point where we are comparing Steve Ott's role on the team to Gustav Nyquist's role on the team, and that is something that if you were to tell me would happen at this point in the season, like before the season even started, I would have been like, we are going to pick first overall in the draft. Like, there is a serious problem there. because that is something like that's borderline like Toronto media bullshit right there. Like that is hot take stove, like nuclear take as you could possibly get. Like you, like you're, you, she is literally going on this tangent, this this tirade of where she's quote tweeting these people who agree with her, and then anybody who doesn't agree with her just gets completely ignored,
or blocked.
Or blocked. She's blocked. She's throwing out blocks now. And it's just like, good Lord, like, what happened? Who hurt you? Like, what did he do to you? And it's like, yeah, Nyquist isn't scoring, and that's a problem. It's a huge problem. But when you are so emotionally, affected by that, to where you need to compare the role of a fourth line grinder whose job is to fight people and sucks at playing the sport and how much he's paid to what a goal scorer should be and what he's getting paid, like, it's just, good God, like, you surely can find something else to talk about, because her last four or five articles have all noted the same goddamn thing.
I have been wondering where her article about like Cronwall is and stuff, like, you know, for you're talking about people who are getting paid a lot of money and are not living up to expectations, like, mm-hmm. There you go, there's someone else right there to talk about. Like, the entire team is not good right now, you know, why single out, you know, some of the people who actually have, you know, I mean, he's only got four goals, but some people have like zero goals.
Yeah. And 13. I mean, he's Prashant. If you're already not following Prashant on Twitter, you ought to be, because he's got a lot of the good, well, actually, stats. And it's not an argument that Nyquist is not free of blame, but like the sheer amount of blame. Like, you get the feeling that Helene could be like given an assignment, like an emergency assignment by the Freep. Like, nobody else is available to go cover the opening of a French bistro in Dearborn, and she'd be like, "I showed up to this French bistro and I ate it, but Tatar and Nyquist weren't there. They suck."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just has to take shots at them no matter what, and the whole. The concept of, like, well, you know, Ott brings intangibles that this team has been missing since Dallas Drake. It's like, this team is way the fuck worse than when they had Dallas Drake. Like, are we trying to argue that the team without Steve Ott would be, like, even worse than they are right now? Because that's what it seems like to me, right?
I mean, you can't even compare Steve Ott to Dallas Drake or the team. Like, Dallas Drake was brought into a completely different team.
I saw that comparison, and I thought I was hallucinating. I was like, someone made up this, like, someone went to a fake tweet generator and made this up, because there is no way that she is that stupid. Like, what a stupid, like, comparison to make.
It's not like Dallas Drake's a good player by any means, but it was just like, he was brought in to a different team. It is what it is. Like, whatever. But Drake is Drake was a better player than Steve Ott. Fuck that. So,
yeah, nicer. He smelled better, more handsome,
had a nicer voice.
I will say that for all of the pants chittingly blood out of the ears stupidity that has come out of that, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't more entertained by Detroit Stiggers, especially Helene this season.
Oh no, it's fun. I mean, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It
gives you something to laugh at in a very dark time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like the idea of, like, hate watching a show.
Exactly. And speaking of laughing at something, it's time for our positivity fucking corner. Like we do every week, because we need it so bad. And, we just live in a world surrounded by vitriol and poopy diapers and anger. So we're going to go ahead and talk about what is positive and what we like. I'm going to go ahead and take the reins here first. I am very pleased with the way the Griffins are performing this year. I think I said that last week, but you know what? Whatever. I'm still happy with that. They won tonight. They shut out the Admirals. Svechnikov had 2 goals, and Rousseau had the other goal. So I'm very happy with that. And in terms of personal life stuff, hey, Christmas is on Sunday. You get to see my family. You know, hang out. You know, is I guess it's kind of weird that I'm calling that positive, because usually Christmas time, family time, you kind of just cringe at that sometimes for some people. But yeah, Christmas time. Hell yeah. So Merry Christmas, or happy holidays to those who do not celebrate Christmas.
It's a war on Christmas.
Shots fired.
God, this PC country. next. Okay. Peter, you're next.
Let's see. So my Christmas present to myself, my Nielsen Red Wings jersey came this week. So that was pretty fun. Yep. Normally I don't sit at home wearing a jersey. I'm not saying anything against anybody who does. You know, normally I just don't. But I decided, you know, I just got it. I put it on, and we won. We beat Anaheim. The next question is why I didn't wear it the next game. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. So it's entirely my fault. But it was really cool. You know, I think it was like a couple of weeks ago, you guys, one of the reader questions was like, you know, what jersey should I get? And so that was my choice. And then also, I think it's really cool that, you know, tonight I get to be on with Lauren, because she was part of my first Winging in a Motown kind of experience. We did the draft, and we did free agency together. And that was, you know, that's pretty cool. I guess it was the draft. It was like the first time, you know, I was really nervous, wasn't really sure. You know, I was like, I think I know what I'm doing. I think I can do this. And it was, you know, it was a really cool first experience, and it was really cool getting to, you know, work with her that day. And so, well, actually with you, sorry, cause you're right there. Duh. But, yeah, so I think that's really awesome. And, a while back on one of the shows, I said that there was a time where I had to drop out suddenly last minute for a recap, and Lauren, you know, you stepped right up and took it. So, you know, that was really cool. So that's definitely making me happy.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Yeah. I guess Lauren, you're going next.
Okay. I want to bring attention to this, cause I don't know how many, of our readers have really been following along with this story. But I know in our chat, we've kind of been following along, and it's been brought up in the, kind of the main hockey chat a lot. But the whole Craig Cunningham story out of Arizona, has been really, really interesting to me. I obviously work in, the medical field. I work in an ICU, at a hospital. And so to hear about his recovery was just incredible. There was a really good piece from, I think, I don't remember what website it was. I know, I think Mackenzie did a piece, but there was another one from this morning that I read that was really, really excellent, really kind of gives the nitty gritty of what he all went through. And to hear of, you know, everything that he went through, and, you know, what his, you know, just the entire, recovery story and everything, it was just really, really cool, especially around this time of the year. You know, it sounds like he's going to be going to rehab sometime soon, which is really great, because, you know, it for a long time there, you know, they really didn't think that he was going to make it. So I just want to throw that out there, you know, hockey gets to keep someone like that, because that's, you know, that's one of those things that you don't ever expect. And it's from the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like it was anything that they could have known about or prevented. So just the fact that, you know, all of the stuff that he went through, all the times he crashed, and, you know, the ECMO, which is basically the technique that saved his life in the end. Just all of that, you know, all of those people that were there, taking care of him. You know, they have kept someone in this culture and in this community that I think, I don't know. It's like I said, I do this for my job, so it's kind of hard to put it into words, especially when I'm not, you know, kind of in that mindset at work. But, you know, like I said, it's just, it's really great to hear that story and hear that he's going to be okay, whether or not he ever plays hockey again. I, you know, it's sure. doubtful, but you know, he made it, you know, and he's going to be okay. So
yeah, great choice there. And, to add on to it, that was the Arizona Daily Star.
Thank you.
Yep. No problem. But yeah, that's a great choice because, it's a great story and, glad to see that he's rebounding. JJ,
I mean, perspective wise, that's really hard to follow.
Yeah,
because I absolutely agree with everything Lauren said. On the ice, shit, I don't know. I like Nick Jensen's assist.
Honest to God, I didn't even see it. I turned the game off at that point because I'm a bad fan.
Terrible.
Awful, awful. No, I want to say that the recap last night was actually from the Tampa game was actually supposed to have been somebody else, but they had kind of an emergency situation come up at last minute, and Lauren was kind enough to jump on that as backup. And I'm not going to say that it's because of this, because that's silly, but I'm almost glad that if we had to have somebody recapping that game, it was Lauren, because
yes.
Lauren is very, unfortunately, is very good at writing recaps after some painful losses.
Yeah, because if that would have been me, it would have been a mess.
Yeah, and it was a refreshing recap. Like,
yeah,
because the game had it all. It went from painful to boring and back again, but honestly, getting having a little bit of fun after a game like that is really important, and I think that Lauren's very good at that. So I wanted to thank you for that, Lauren.
That's all, Lauren.
Absolutely. You're very welcome, guys. Thank you.
And you are absolutely right there, because there's probably no one else on the website that can bring light to a shitty loss like that, like Lauren can, because she's very good at maintaining the. Maybe not like positivity, but just like really good at putting things in perspective and putting light on things that maybe not all of us are. You know, JJ and I can rattle off jokes about shit, but you know, to coming off of a loss like that where nobody is happy, obviously it was really refreshing. So good stuff on you, because I don't think I would have been able to do that. So, anyways, that concludes Positivity Corner. And we're going to move on to reader questions as always. JJ, let's do the reader questions, bro.
All right, let's do this shit. We're going to start off with Case Denji. Just some snark on how many varies will be attached to the organization's disappointment in Mantha for not leading the league in scoring, points, grittiness, height, balls juggled at one time, etc.
The record very, is three, very, right? Very disappointing. That's all I can say.
Yeah,
very
under four. Disappointing.
Although that led to a good thing where Peter said he'll never get over Macho Grande. That's a good reference, Peter. in the next two seasons, Tatar, A.A. Larkin, Mantha, Bertuzzi, plus XO Jensen, Marchenko, Sproul will become RFA. With us unnecessarily spending to the cap as we are currently, how do we keep this core of players signed beyond 2018-19? Do we expose the shit out of bad contracts during the expansion draft, or try to actually do something smart? That's a lot of people to call a core, but
yeah, core is usually like two or three players.
Yeah, three players.
Yeah, I would say that's the one thing, right? That I think I feel confident in Ken Holland is managing restricted free agent contracts when he needs to get value out of them. So I don't know. I think we'll be all right. I think they'll figure it out. Do I think that all of those players are going to be here in 3-4 years? Absolutely not. There will be one or two that are missing.
Yeah.
And they probably rhyme with Papar and Pie Twist.
Yes, Pustav Pyquist.
Pustav! Fuck you.
Elite came up with that one.
What?
Elite came up with that one. She calls him Pustav.
Behind his back. I love it. I love it.
DTD Tank had another question. Assuming one of Mrazek or Howard are traded in the next 1 or 2 years, do we reach inside the organization for a new backup, acquire one in a trade, or go to the FA market in the offseason? I'm really asking this to understand your assessment of our goaltending depth between Kuro, Patterson, and Pascal. No love for Calvin Heater. Lauren, what do you think?
If it's between... You know, I think they give a chance to Patterson because, you know, I think he's pretty good. He was a drafted player from, I can't even remember how many years ago now. But I think they try and see what they have first rather than go outside of the organization, which is actually a little bit against what they've been doing for the last several years. But I think in terms of goaltending, like, that's kind of seems like what they've, you know, kind of always done, at least as long as I've been following the team. So
personally, I think that you've got your backup in Kuro as of right now. I'm not convinced that Kuro is going to be a starter by any means, and I'm not convinced that Patterson's going to be an NHL goalie by any means. I think that I still think they're going to remain committed to Peter Mrazek, barring a complete, he just goes right off the rails and turns into a complete enigma, which could happen. That being said, in terms of backup goalies, I don't even know if Patterson will be a backup goalie at the NHL level. He still kind of strikes me as he could be a McCollum kind of situation. He's good. He's done really well at the ECHL, obviously, this year, and he's got time left. But with that being said, backup goalies are easy to find. You can hit the free agency market for that and find a suitable backup goaltender. I mean, you know, they did it with Gustafson, and you know, yeah, that's pretty much if need be, they'll probably just hit free agency.
Yeah, I mean, goalies are so enigmatic as a whole, too. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you know, like, you know, I mean, how many times do you see, you know, somebody wins a Vezina next year, you know, they're 500. You know, I mean, it happens pretty frequently. So, you know, I think I'm with Howard being out. I mean, I do hope Kuro gets some starts. I want to see. I want to see what he has at the NHL level. You know, like you said before, I thought, you know, when he came up, I mean, you know, he played pretty well overall. You know, I think I said it right after that game. He played pretty well overall. Like to see him get some more starts and, you know, see what he can do.
He definitely has the build of an NHL goaltender.
Sure.
That should be nowadays. He's fucking huge. So,
yeah.
He's like a Ben Bishop size. So, and he's a good goalie. He's done so well in the AHL. So, in the way he started, if nobody remembers, he started like a complete mess. Like, he was terrible. He couldn't buy a win. And then he just bounced back and, Salako just kind of like helped him develop into a really good goaltender. So, maybe he does restart the goalie cycle here in Detroit. Who knows? We've only seen him once, so we'll see.
Only to add is that the aforementioned cap crunch may help really solve this too, where the Red Wings aren't going to have a lot of flexibility to go maybe out on free agency and do that. So, backup goalie is a great opportunity to save some cap dollars, and guys from within your own organization fit that mold perfectly. Swore Lordsome says, what's with all the sellout crowd bullshit? Every game I hear Ken and Mick gush about another sellout crowd at the Joe, but when you look at the stands, it's emptier than my bottle of Jack after a Wings game. I realize technically all tickets are sold because Ticketmaster buys them up, but why is there a need to sell it to viewers? And I'm going to go ahead and take this one off the bat. The need to sell it to viewers comes from, I mean, Ken and Mick are Detroit Red Wings employees. Mm-hmm. I know that they work on Fox Sports Detroit, but they are paid directly by the Red Wings. So they are propaganda, and the concept of all is good, it's a lot of fun in the Joe, and everybody's there having a great old time. Even if you can see it on TV, selling it to the viewers is important to the Red Wings, that that's still what's going on. It doesn't necessarily, because the only other option is like, oh, well, the crowd is kind of sparse here. It sounds shitty to say from the announcers. So that's the reason.
Yep. Nothing else to add there. I mean,
yeah.
Acadiani 6, how much do you miss the mule on this team?
A lot.
Yeah.
As much as I, like, as much as a lot of people probably hate to say it, because of his contract and all that shit. And hey, everybody, just to let you know that we had some technical difficulties with, during our reader questions. So we might not have gotten your question. So if we didn't, don't get mad at us. Please just save it for the next one. You know, we do it every week. Yeah, just some technical difficulties. I know, sorry, Christmas time, we're just doing this to you. But get us back next week if you didn't hear your questions. Thanks.
That they're trying to pump up his value. They honestly are high on him. They like the guy.
Mm-hmm. To the point where I think it was Chris Osgood actually had to stop John Keating from talking about him in the post game the other night when after the Ducks game, like, they were going on and on and on about, you know, how he created the win for this team and blah blah blah, and I like almost was literally yelling at my television to just stop, because it was so stupid to like, and they just kept going on and on about it. Like, they just kept maintaining that it was, you know, because of him that the Wings won that game, and it was like, there,
rah rah,
yeah, you know it.
Yeah.
That was just, it was too much. And it was,
yeah,
it was disappointing.
And I'm all for saying like a fight sparked the team or like woke the team up or something, because it definitely wakes the crowd up. Like, there's mm-hmm. no denying that, which can wake the team up or something like that. But saying that a fight sprouted a 6-goal outburst or whatever, however many goals it was, just give me a fucking break. Come on. Like, can we just, I don't know.
Can you not?
Yeah, if that's what it takes, can you not? If that's what it takes to spark offense out of a team, then you have huge issues, like way bigger than you can comprehend. So,
yeah, and the other thing about that is that when there's not a lot of positives to talk about with the Red Wings, too. I mean, they are consistently playing bad, and so.
Right.
It was kind of in the preseason article that I wrote about how basically none of the diggers had anything nice to say about his skill set, because it was, you know, it's all intangibles when it comes to that. Well, when there's not a lot of good things to say about the product on the ice, you start looking for intangibles, and that's what he does. He makes the game more interesting. So mm-hmm. it's generally the Red Wings' fault that Ott is, because it took like all season for Dallas Drake to get like really that much love. I mean, there was a lot of like little here and there, but you didn't notice it, because at the time there was a lot of like, well, that's Thomas Holmstrom stealing another goal from Nick Lidstrom, ha ha ha. And so you would have to get into like the weeds when they ran out of shit to talk about to hear anything about, you know, Dallas Drake's intangibles helping out, or. Plus, the Wings weren't losing, so it didn't bother anybody.
Right.
If wanted to go ahead and say and give Dallas Drake credit. It's like, okay, fine, whatever. That's silly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah, like I said, Dallas Drake was brought into a completely different situation.
Okay. Yep. Very last piece. Nick New. Not a question. Just wanted to say I finally removed MLive from my RSS feed. I've seen enough posts where it's literally just a title and a video. So, like, thanks for having journalistic integrity. You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you for the compliment. because we are certainly not journalists here at Wing It Motown. Mm-hmm. I mean, a couple of us have journalism degrees, but
we don't have access.
We are not traditional journalists. Yeah, if we try our best. We try hard. You know, we love the game.
We bring 100%.
We have good intangibles.
Yeah, we're good in the room.
Very, very
good. And we do have integrity.
Yeah. And we do, yeah. And we will, every now and then, we will spark a win. I don't know if that's true, but...
I'm going to...
But if we believe it hard enough, we can write enough articles about it.
We have a lot of heart. That's all that you need to know. We have a lot of heart. And that's really important. Okay, so that was a good segment of reader questions. Any hockey related thoughts before we close it out? The Red Wings have kind of a light schedule coming up here before the next time we talk. Obviously, with the Christmas, they're not going to play Christmas Eve. They won't play Christmas, and they play Friday. They'll play Florida. So obviously, you just pretty much mark that up as a loss. Sorry, but I just. Whatever.
Vincent Trocheck will score.
Yeah, Trocheck again. Will score four goals or something stupid like that. Or, I don't know, Jake McCaber or some dickhead from their farm team will score four
McCaber?
McCaber. Captain
McCaber.
McKenzie.
He's or whatever. Scottish.
I don't know. How about Thurman Merman. Thurman Merman will come score four goals against us. Sixth round pick back in 2009 or something like that.
It's Florida, it's going to be Jakob Kindle with a Hattie.
Oh God.
Kill me in the face.
Final hockey related thought is I think for Red Wings fans, the team is like oversauced eggs Benedict. And they're just tired of the hollandaise.
No. I hate you so much. You really should have saved that for Twitter.
Oh, I'm going to put it on Twitter too.
Okay. Oh my God. God, you were going to burn in hell for that one.
You're all
welcome. Can't really follow that.
I can't. Final hockey related thought is from JJ.
And go Red Wings.
Yeah.
Go Red Wings. Fuck you, JJ. Go Red Wings. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and just say that that'll close us out. We can't really top that. So this has been the holiday special edition. Merry Christmas, you filthy animals. And have a happy new year. Go Wings.